Today is Monday, January 13th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the accidental downing of a passenger jetliner brings Iranian protesters back to the streets.
They should be demanding answers, and they should be demanding accountability and justice as well. This is a tragedy that should not have happened.
Why are international students choosing not to study in the United States? Also ahead, singer Billie Eilish's success seems to have no bounds. She just hit another major milestone. It's all on today's International Edition. Hundreds of people protested in several cities around Iran on Saturday after the military admitted to mistakenly shooting down a civilian Ukrainian plane, killing all 176 people on board. VOA's Julie Tabo has more.
A night of vigils for the victims of a Ukrainian passenger airline mistakenly shot down by the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps air defense erupted into anti-government protests in cities across Iran. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani issued a statement attributing the tragic incident to human error. It took the Iranian government 3 days to finally take responsibility for downing the airline that killed all 176 passengers and crew members. Amir Ali Hajizadeh, commander of Aerospace Force of the Revolutionary Guards, said that once he was confident that this incident had occurred, he wished for death for himself so that he wouldn't have been witness to it. Some vigils for the crash victims, however, turned angry with protesters taking to the streets. Some chanted, "Our leader is ignorant and a source of shame," and others called the IRGC forces incompetent and a source of shame for our nation. Police fired tear gas into the crowds. U.S. President Donald Trump sent out a number of tweets in both Persian and English expressing his long-standing support for the Iranian protesters. Outrage over the downed airline was widespread. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said in a statement on Saturday,
"Iran has pleaded guilty to crashing the Ukrainian plane, but we insist on a full admission of guilt. We expect from Iran assurances of their readiness for a full and open investigation, bringing those responsible to justice, the return of the bodies of the dead, the payment of compensation, official apologies through diplomatic channels."
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau also demanded answers.
The message to people around the world who are outraged at this incident is that they should be demanding answers, and they should be demanding accountability and justice as well. This is a tragedy that should not have happened. We need to make sure that we are supporting families who are going through terrible grief.
This past Friday, the U.S. placed more sanctions on Iran in response to its missile attack on U.S. military troops in Iraq last week. And it threatened further action to weaken Iran's economy if Tehran continues to carry out what it considers terrorist actions. Julie Tabo, VOA News, Washington.
So why did President Donald Trump order the drone strike that killed one of Iran's top generals? His administration says there was an imminent threat against Americans, but it has so far failed to convince many Democrats that the strike was necessary. Some critics see a political motive in the president's decision to act as impeachment looms ahead of next year's election. VOA's Brian Patton reports.
The prospect of another imminent war in the Middle East has subsided for now after Iran's retaliatory missile strike against a U.S. military base in Iraq caused no reported casualties. But the recent escalation of tensions following the U.S. drone strike in Iraq that killed Iranian General Qassem Soleimani has some critics suggesting President Trump was motivated to take military action in part to shift attention away from his impeachment.
He does look for distractions whenever there's bad news surrounding him. Impeachment is a lot of bad news.
President Trump has criticized the impeachment process. The Republican-controlled Senate trial is expected to reject the House of Representatives' two impeachment articles. They seek to force the president from office for abuse of power and obstruction stemming from his alleged efforts to leverage Ukraine aid for political dirt on a Democratic opponent. The president's decision to take military action against Iran, some analysts say, was motivated largely by frustration over Iran's continued attacks against the U.S. and allies in the region. But frustrations at home may have also been a motivating factor, say analysts.
He feels stymied and bottled up and criticized. I think a lot of that was important, and this was a way, there's no doubt, to regain and recontrol or control the narrative.
Past presidents have also been accused of using a military crisis abroad to rally support at home. In 1998, some of President Bill Clinton's critics charged that missile strikes against Afghanistan and Sudan in response to terrorist attacks at U.S. embassies were taken to shift focus from his impeachment. In 2012, Trump himself suggested his predecessor, former President Barack Obama, might try to provoke a crisis with Iran to win re-election. In today's highly polarized political climate, it is questionable that President Trump's recent military action will rally the nation's support.
But foreign policy is unpredictable. And if things were to escalate, that could change things dramatically, either for or against the president. So I think that's the wild card.
While the president wants to project military strength and has sent more troops to the region, he also opposes getting involved in another foreign war. And though the current crisis has subsided, the risk of further conflict with Iran remains high. Brian Patton, VOA News, Washington.
Well, there were huge crowds of protesters over the weekend as thousands took to the streets to hold rallies again in Hong Kong. The crowds were not as massive as some have been in the past, and they were much less violent than previous incidents between protesters and police. A former British colony, Hong Kong was returned to China in 1997, and under the framework of one country, two systems, the city enjoys greater democratic rights than those on the mainland, but protesters say those freedoms have been steadily eroding under Chinese President Xi Jinping. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke to Ren Xin, reporter in Hong Kong for VOA's China branch.
Thousands of people rallied in Hong Kong on Sunday. The theme of the rally is calling on the international community to impose sanctions on Hong Kong officials if the Hong Kong government does not carry out political reforms and grant the Hong Kong people universal suffrage this year. We know there's a legislative council election coming up in September. So they want real universal suffrage. They want And they also urge other countries to follow the United States in passing legislation to sanction Hong Kong officials if they do not respond to their five demands, which include universal suffrage. So this rally was organized by a group called Civil Assembly Team. And at the rally, we spoke to democracy activist Joshua Wong. He talked about one of the international platforms is for the United Nations Human Rights Committee review of Hong Kong human rights condition. Let's take a listen.
In June of 2020, the United Nations Human Rights Committee will have the regular review on Hong Kong's human rights condition, referred to the ICCPR. So with the humanitarian crisis suffered in 2019, I think it's a must for the United Nations Human Rights Committee to investigate on the police brutality. And when Hong Kong government refused to conduct investigation to set up the independence committee, we hope to through this kind of international platform could put more pressure and let Hong Kong government realize that they need to respect on a human rights standard around the world.
It does seem, and I'd like you to talk about, if you can, the awareness of this, that what is going on in the rest of the world has kind of put the Hong Kong protest on the second or third page, if that.
Yes, actually, lately, you're right. It's relatively quiet compared to what happened last year, and even on January 1st, we know there's a big rally on January 1st. But after that, it's been relatively pretty quiet. There were demonstrations and and rallies. They're all like smaller scale rallies, which are like just scattered around the city. So this, you can see it's after the January 1st rally, this might be, you can call it a kind of a major rally. There were estimated 35,000 people at the Edinburgh Place. If you're familiar with Hong Kong, it's a pretty small square, but I was at the rally and really you can see a lot of people there. So 35,000 people, that's a lot. But this is what they call a pre-march assembly. Actually, they are planning a bigger march like a week from now on the 19th. So this assembly, the purpose of this assembly is to mobilize people and raise awareness. So mobilize people, more people to participate in next week's rally. It also a rally, they call it, calling on the international community to sanction government officials if they don't respond to their five demands, including this universal suffrage.
VOA China branch reporter Ren Xin speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. President Trump and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi are taunting each other as the impeachment trial looms. Four Iraqi troops have been wounded in an attack on an airbase north of Baghdad. Support hedged for Trump's claim of Iranian commanders, that the Iranian commander wanted to blow up four U.S. embassies. And a new strain of SARS is being blamed for a pneumonia outbreak in China. Find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Preparations for the observation of the United Nations 75th anniversary are underway as the world body's ability to maintain global peace and security appears ever more tenuous. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UN headquarters in Geneva.
The United Nations was founded in the aftermath of World War II on October 24, 1945, to prevent another devastating conflict. The 51 founding members hoped this new body would succeed where its predecessor, the League of Nations, had failed in maintaining global peace and security. UN Undersecretary General Fabrizio Hochschild is special advisor on the preparations for the commemoration of the 75th anniversary of the United Nations. He acknowledges the world body has fallen short of this mark, but he tells VOA conflicts would have been more intense and frequent and longer without the United Nations. Moreover, he adds, some superpower confrontations have certainly been averted.
But at the moment, the conflict resolution aspect of the United Nations, the principal body of which is the Security Council, is clearly not fulfilling its promise. And perhaps the most painful testimony of that is the hundreds of thousands of dead that have come out of the Syrian conflict.
Against these setbacks, Hochschild says, are significant achievements made over the last 75 years in the betterment of the social, economic, and human rights of people throughout the world.
If we think of health, the average life expectancy when the UN was founded was around 50 years. Today, it's around 75 years. People are living 25 years longer. If we think of poverty eradication, when the UN was founded, global poverty levels were 50%. Today, they're down to 10%.
Special events are being planned in the lead-up to the UN's 75th anniversary on October 24th. These include a large-scale youth forum at the end of March in New York and a ceremony in San Francisco on June 26th to mark the signing of the UN Charter there on that day in 1945. On September 21st, world leaders will gather in New York at a UN summit coinciding with the opening of the UN General Assembly. They will discuss opinions and suggestions gathered throughout the year on ways to increase global cooperation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Well, for decades, U.S. universities have attracted large numbers of foreign students who add brain power to American classrooms while adding billions to the U.S. economy. But international students seem less enthusiastic about the United States as of late. VOA's Kathleen Strzok and Bronwyn Benito take a look at the factors prompting a growing number of foreign students to look elsewhere.
Srishti Sinha knows exactly why she chose to come to college in the U.S.
The freedom that you get here in terms of choosing what you want to study, and also the opportunities that studying here gives you. We have prime ministers and presidents come and speak at Columbia during the World Leaders Forum. You get to attend talks with Nobel laureates.
But that's not the only draw for prospective international students.
U.S. courses offer a more vibrant discussion. There is more peer-to-peer discussion going on in the class, whereas in the UK is more lecturing all the time.
More than 1 million international university students study in the United States today. But is enthusiasm for an American education waning?
We've seen in the last 2 years shifts in where students want to go.
Some foreign students balk at the price of a U.S. college or university, which averages between $25,000 a year at state schools and as much as $70,000 a year at private universities. And cost isn't the only hurdle. Obtaining a U.S. student visa can also be a challenge.
I met a lot of parents who wanted to send their kids earlier, but were like, oh, no, you know, with the visa situation, you know, the climate against immigrants and whatnot, we are unsure, and that was a huge factor in them deciding against it.
I think the number one struggle with this visa situation is not having stability, security.
I think it's the uncertainty that really affects how a lot of students view America as an education destination now.
That uncertainty is heightened by America's often harsh political debate over immigration, as well as U.S. policies targeting travelers from certain countries.
The appearance of being unwelcome, the strong anti-immigrant rhetoric that unfortunately is dominating our political environment, those sorts of sentiments can be misread internationally as negative feelings towards international students and scholars.
Meanwhile, violence in the U.S., including mass shootings at American schools and crimes against foreigners, are trumpeted in headlines around the globe. The end result is a leveling off of international student enrollment in the U.S. According to the annual survey by the Institute for International Education, the U.S. is still the number one choice for foreign students. But countries like Canada, Australia, and New Zealand are gaining popularity.
We know that international students also have more choices than ever before about where to pursue higher education.
Despite the hefty price tag and other factors that make the U.S. less attractive, the draw for international students remains strong.
Being here opened the doors of the world to me.
The people I meet, the opportunities I get access to, I think the United States really gives you some of the best of that in the sense that it's not just American, it's also global.
Opportunity changes everything.
U.S. universities that depend on foreign student revenue hope that sense of opportunity endures. Bronwyn Benito, VOA News, Washington.
And you're listening to International Edition. We'll be back in a minute.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
The little-
lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandy.
VOA's International Edition continues. Well, the start of the new year is the time for resolutions and promises, and New York State has decided to welcome in 2020 with a series of bans. Governor Andrew Cuomo signed almost 700 initiatives, ranging from helping immigrants to protecting pets. Nina Vishneva looked into what will be banned in the state and how New Yorkers feel about it. Anna Rice narrates her story.
Plastic bags will be banned in New York State starting March 2020. 5-cent paper bags or reusable fabric ones will replace them.
It's a good idea. It helps the environment. A lot of states are doing it, so it makes sense that we should too.
For now, it's easier, but yeah, if they could stop doing plastic bags, that'd be cool.
It's amazing. Starting Monday, I won't use them anymore.
The care for the environment that fueled this decision was behind some other bans, including paying to drive into the busiest areas of Manhattan. While reducing the emissions, it will also help navigate the traffic nightmare that downtown New York is for drivers and commuters. This law, though, doesn't come into effect until 2021.
No. I'm moving to Jersey.
Without this, it's so hard. I don't want to pay for this. Thank you.
Fees keep going up, but, you know, it's helping the community, right? The neighborhood.
It's not just drivers who will see a change in the near future. Foodies will have to say goodbye to foie gras. The New York City Council deemed it cruel to force-feed birds for the sake of a delicacy. Despite protests from farmers and restaurants, starting from 2022, New Yorkers will need to pick a different appetizer for their fancy dinners. The fur ban was also met passionately, both by its supporters and those who oppose it.
No fur ban!
Freedom of choice! Freedom of choice!
However, a lot of New Yorkers were happy to have this ban, sporting their fake and much cheaper fur coats. And large stores seemed quite happy the demand for synthetic fur will likely go up, while fur coat store owners were trying to prove their own eco-friendliness.
Those traps are internationally approved. We sign up to international conventions. It's generally normally a 10 to 15 year life cycle that people will have a fur coat for.
I think fur is cruel, is outdated, and should not be represented in a progressive city like New York City.
Harlem locals opposed the new ban as well, but for different reasons. In the letter they wrote to the city council, they stated the importance of fur products in the African-American culture. The fur industry takes up a considerable part of the state's economy. About 80% of all U.S. fur coats are made in New York State. More than 10,000 people are working in this sphere, including in family companies that have been in business for decades. Yet starting in 2020, the natural fur chapter will be closed for New York. Other fur bearers have won their own fight as well. New York became the first U.S. state that officially banned onychectomy, surgical removal of claws in cats. In its desire to cover as many spheres of life as possible, New York paid attention to the grave issue of xenophobia as well. The New York City Commission on Human Rights banned discriminatory use of illegal alien, promising to fine perpetrators for up to $250,000.
When people talk about a deportation machine, it is real. It is happening every single day. They are trying to rapidly deport as many undocumented New Yorkers as possible.
What is more, according to this new law, immigrants in New York can acquire a driving license regardless of their legal status. The license can be used only to drive. They won't be able to use it for voting or flying within the U.S. Another controversial law will ban any religious exemptions that previously allowed parents to forego vaccinating their kids. Now all children and students need to be vaccinated, unless otherwise contraindicated. These are not all the laws that are waiting to come into effect this winter. And while some raise questions and spark controversy, they're all designed, the city authorities believe, to make New York a better and kinder place. For Nina Vishneva in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Well, it seems like every other day we are talking about the success of 18-year-old singer Billie Eilish. The young musician is yet again making news as the first person with a debut album to be the most commercially successful of the year. Eilish's debut album in 2019, When We Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go? Produced entirely with her brother in their family home, made Rolling Stone's top 200 albums chart, and finished the year with 2.5 million album equivalent units purchased in 2019. The last time that happened was with 50 Cent's 2003 album, Get Rich or Die Trying. Well, you have been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. And we thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
I like it when you take control, even if you know that you don't own me. I'll let you play the role I'll be. And once the water starts to rise, and heaven's out of sight, she wants the devil in 18. Simple, give me time. I can't commit to anything but a crime. But can't find me. I'm still in California. My turn to ignore you. Don't say I didn't warn you. All the good girls go to hell, 'cause even God herself has an answer. Once the water starts to rise, then it's out of sight. So want the devil team. Look at you, maybe me. I know I'm not your friend, but that's some greenery. Feed us in the bed. The color is killing me. Man, it's such a fool, why are we saying that? For our help, wow. Hell's burning in California. My turn to ignore you. Don't say I didn't want you. All the good girls go to heaven, 'cause even God herself has an illumination. Once the water starts to rise, then heaven's out of sight. To save you now, my God is gonna own me. There's nothing left to save me.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information. Thank you.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy Meek.